Welcome to the 48th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. I've been bringing these plant-based wellness podcasts to you for almost a year to try to spread the word on the health benefits of a whole food plant-based diet. I also am an endurance athlete and try to throw a little bit of that in, especially as a plant-based endurance athlete. This weekend will be my first marathon of the fall season. It'll be the Morgantown, West Virginia Marathon. I'm anxious to run with my daughter, so I'm looking forward to seeing her. I haven't seen her for a couple of months, and it'll be nice to run where I grew up, past my old house, see a lot of friends, and always the post-marathon excitement to look forward to. So that's my first endurance event this fall, and I'll follow that with a Ironman distance race or an iron distance race in called the Beach to Battle in October. But before I get to the interview today, the interview today is with Robert Cheek, who is the author of Shred It. He's a vegan bodybuilder that I think you'll enjoy a whole lot. But at first, I'd like to maybe digress a little bit to the endurance world and give a shout out to my friends. I'd like to congratulate my friends Lee and Kim for finishing Ironman Wisconsin. They both were in the age group of 55 to 59 year old females, and you know, that is quite an accomplishment. Both of them have complete several iron distance races a year. And they have for some time. And, you know, I have to say that they're my triathlon mentors. I started out running before, and I did marathons before I switched to triathlons. And they're the ones that convinced me to try triathlons. Mainly, they would take me on bike rides and sometimes drop me, sometimes not. But I spent a lot of time riding behind them and swimming behind them and running behind them and alongside them. And I've enjoyed watching their progress. Kim was actually the winner of the age group and has secured a spot to Kona this year. She's a very she's a driven, fantastic, lifelong athlete, and it was a great performance by her, and you know, certainly well deserved. Lee's also a previous Kona qualifier and finisher, but not this race. She's a little different in that she was kind of like me. We took up endurance sports later in life, but she's equally driven and determined. You know, both of them are full-time and in the workforce full-time. Both have family commitments, and, you know, they both train many hours, as all endurance athletes do. And, you know, I think it's kind of the norm a little bit for, you know, especially long endurance athletes, to have very busy lifestyle and styles and juggle a whole lot of things. And, you know, maybe that's why people like Lee and Kim that do a bunch of things do well in Ironman distance races. I don't know. But anyway, again, Lee didn't finish as well as she'd like to this year, and it's kind of a tough pill to swallow. You train so hard and long, and everything comes down to the one day of the race. And the reality of it is, on that particular day, there's a lot of factors that, you know, not are always in your control. And, you know, the pieces, despite your best effort, don't fall into place. I know she was very disappointed, and we all hoped that she would have had a better time. But, you know, I think it's you know, I've had my share of bad finishes. And sometimes, I guess the first thing you think, you may have let other people down, or people will be disappointed in you, especially when there's such a buildup and people know that you're going to, especially these events, these Ironman races that are so, you know, known about, and you know, there's so much riding on them. But, you know, certainly, your family and friends aren't disappointed in the time on the clock. They're happy that you finished, and they want you to be happy and healthy at the end of the race. You know, Lee is someone that I really admire with, you know, the efforts that she puts in, you know, both at work and with her training. And again, she, you know, this is not her profession. This is a hobby. But she treats it just like it would be her, it's her profession as far as her efforts. And we all tend to do that in these endurance events. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves for the outcomes. And, you know, the so-called, you know, win, as we define it in our heads, and that win is usually a specific time that we're looking for. And it's not necessarily to beat someone else, but it's to better our own time or to make a certain time or cut off to qualify for Kona or to win an age group or, again, just to better your own time. But I don't think that that win is all that it's up. It's that win definition is, I guess, completely accurate. And I just like to, you know, say that I think that win, as far as endurance athletes and endurance events and triathlons, it comes all along the journey of leading up to the race. You know, it's a win to wake up early in the morning before daylight and show up to swim or to bike or to run with your friends. The camaraderie that you get when you spend 4 hours running or 6 hours riding a bike with someone is priceless. If you ever wanted to get to know someone, just go for a long run or a long ride with them. Yeah, you get to know a lot of things that you wouldn't get to know over years of being casual friends with people. You know, the walls tend to come down when you're on a long ride or run and you're kind of suffering. And people see you at your best and at your worst. And so I think that there's a friendship that develops in training partners that is priceless and certainly a win. You know, another win is completing workouts along that journey to the race end that you didn't think you could do. I'm not a swimmer, and I joined the Master Swim Group this year. And, you know, one of the slow kids in the slow lane, so to speak. I want to get faster. And, you know, half the time I'm extremely worried about what the main set's going to be. You know, if I'll be able to complete it, if I, you know, how far behind am I going to come to the wall before everybody else? And will I actually get the workout completed? And when you do finish it and you live through it, you know, it's a really good feeling that, you know, you were able to complete a workout or climb a certain hill that, you know, looked really steep. So I think that's a win, you know, again, especially, you know, I won't say at our age, but as an adult, when you're taking on new sports and new challenges, that really puts you to your limits. It's also a win when you're coming in, and the sun's coming up from a run or a ride and the sun's starting to come up, or you happen to see some nature along the way. We ride back into an area where sometimes we see deer or turkey. And last week I even got to see a goat. She belonged to one of the people that have a lot, but she was out walking along the road. And so it was, you know, it's always fun to see animals that you don't necessarily see on a daily basis. I also think it's a win with all the memories you create, sharing, you know, the stories of that adventure and talking about the next adventure. And it's certainly a win when you have that cold beer after a long ride or a race with a friend and recap the stories of what went right and what went wrong for the day. So I guess I'd like to just say in this little monologue before I start the interview with Robert Cheek that, you know, the clock at the end of the race is just a small fraction of the story for an endurance event. You know, the journey leading up to it is so much more, and there's so many more memories than that little clock, and that time is really hardly worth remembering. So, you know, I hope that I'll keep chasing Lee and Kim for many years to come, swimming and biking and running. And I'd just like to say congratulations to my friends for completing the Ironman Wisconsin. And I respect both of you tremendously and value all the time on our journey in endurance sports. So today I have an interview with Robert Cheek. He is the author of the book called Shred It, and it's a very interesting read, and is worth reading to whether you're a bodybuilder or a weekend warrior or a weightlifter. But he talks a little bit about his story. Robert has been a vegan for a long time. He was a vegan before he became a bodybuilder. He actually started his athletic career as a runner. He was somewhat of a little guy, but was intrigued by, you know, the covers of muscle magazines and being a strong guy. And, you know, this book talks of, the interview in his book talk a little bit about his journey to actually achieve his bodybuilding goals. And a lot of things that are very applicable to plant-based nutrition and an active lifestyle that basically, you know, we have to keep ourselves accountable. Sometimes we think we're doing all that we can do, but we're really not. And then we really look in deep inside, we can and take a good look at what we're doing. We can find ways that we can improve perhaps both our training and our diet. I have got several and had several patients and had a few emails from people that have not been able to achieve cholesterol levels where they want to get down that below 200 range or hit that magic 150 heart attack proof range. And they feel that they're eating a perfect diet. And Robert goes into, you know, he thought he was eating a perfect diet and couldn't gain weight. And when he really looked into it, he found that things that he really could be doing to change things. So I think that there's a lot of good messages in the book that'll maybe allow us to look at our own lives a little bit closer and see where we can become more consistent and make changes to achieve our goals a little better than we thought we could. So without further ado, welcome Robert Cheek. Welcome, Robert Cheek. Robert is a vegan bodybuilder, and he's been vegan for approximately 20 years, and he has a book out called Shred It that I think is applicable to the entire plant-based and vegan community as far as becoming strong, becoming fit, and becoming healthy. So welcome, Robert.
Thanks, Jamie. Great to be here. I appreciate you taking time to talk with me today.
Yeah, I love your book. You start out very upfront and direct, which is what I like. Hold yourself accountable.
Yeah.
So
that's a tone that I thought was really important to set, and I really believe that our behaviors create our actions, and our actions create our outcomes. And the more consistent we can be, the more accountable and transparent we can be about what we're trying to achieve and what we're doing on a regular basis, gives us a more honest picture of what we're really doing. I mean, we may say one thing like, oh yeah, I eat healthy all the time, or I work out all the time. And this may not be true at all, actually, when we're really transparent about what we're doing day in and day out and how we manage our 1,440 minutes in a day. So that's why I took that tone with the book. And I think it's really helped a lot of people put things into perspective and set achievable goals and then know the steps to take to get there.
Yeah, I think oftentimes, especially maybe in the weight loss transformation world, it's okay, I want the six pack abs and the size 2 clothing immediately, and we forget the journey, so to speak.
Yeah, we want oftentimes 100% of the return on 40% of the effort that it takes to get there. And then we get a little discouraged, we lose hope, and that's why January 17th comes around as the most popular day that people give up on their New Year's resolutions. And so what I really want to communicate to people is that if we do set goals that are attainable, then we can measure these based on our actions, the time we have, the commitment that we plan to give to it, the efforts, all these different things based on science, logic, reason. Okay, let's set some achievable goals, and then let's take these tangible steps to work towards it and assess our progress along the way. And I think that is a recipe for success that's better than almost any other approach out there, because you get to measure it and make assessments along the way and tweak things if necessary. And at the end of the day, you're accountable and transparent about what you're doing, and then you know why you did or did not achieve.
Now, you started out in the running world, interestingly, you know, so you started out as a little guy wanting to get bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's two ways to go, little guy getting bigger and big guy getting littler, so to speak. But you started your journey really becoming vegan first. Is that correct?
Yeah. You're right. I was a little guy. I was 89 pounds when I was in eighth grade, about to go into high school. And I was a fast little runner. I was, I guess I took pride in the fact that I had the fastest mile run in elementary school and then in middle school. And then eventually I attained that in high school as well and was on the cross country team. And it was my sophomore year in high school that my older sister, Tanya, organized an animal rights week. And I had no interest, really. I just had some respect for my older sister and wanted to support her. And so I told my friends that rather than going to lunch with you guys every day, there are two friends that I would go with to sandwich shops and get a ham sandwich or a fast food place, essentially every day, 5 days a week for lunch. I said, just for this week, I'm going to become vegetarian, whatever that means. And that was December 8th, 1995, and I became vegan then, and it's been just about 20 years now. I think a few more months would be exactly 20 years. So I started for animal rights, and I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm, and so I was close with farm animals. I was in the 4-H program. I raised dairy cows. I raised chickens and rabbits, and we had goats and horses and ponies and ducks and geese and many animals on our farm. And so I think ultimately I looked at animals, farm animals specifically, like a lot of people look at dogs and cats. And in that essence, I really had no interest in contributing to animal cruelty and suffering, and certainly didn't want to eat animal products. And so that came first. All the weightlifting and fitness would come, aside from running, all the weightlifting would come years later.
And so, you know, so you and your sister became vegan first, I presume?
Yeah.
And then so what's a family farm? You know, your parents all of a sudden, okay, so we got this farm and nobody's going to eat the meat. What happened there with that?
Well, very interesting. So my parents actually met at the animal science department at Oregon State University. My father was a professor at Oregon State in animal agriculture, animal science. And he just retired a couple years ago, but for about 30 years, he taught college students how to raise animals for food. And sure enough, his oldest child, my sister, becomes a vegan, and then I follow, become vegan. My youngest brother, who's 11 years old at the time, becomes vegetarian. He's actually still a vegetarian today, 20 years later. And then the middle brother, he turned out to be the farmer. So according to my parents, jokingly, I think, he's the only one that turned out right. And so, I mean, we literally would have two vehicles parked side by side. My sister's 1970-something Volkswagen bus that's all painted with the beetles and mushrooms and all these flowers and everything that says, bumper stickers that say, if you love animals called pets, why do you eat animals called dinner? And my brother with a big pickup truck and gun rack right next to it, enjoy a juicy steak tonight. And that's what our family was like for a while. So you can imagine holidays, gatherings, get-togethers. This dates back to the mid-90s. So it's definitely been an interesting family experience. And, you know, my parents got divorced, but my mom still lives on the farm where I grew up, and I go back to visit often, a few times a year. I was just there a month ago, or less than a month ago, it's really fun to go back, and I certainly appreciate the different aspects of the farm upbringing now, like the hard work and the dedication and all those different things that were part of it that would help me in bodybuilding and business later on. But anyway, interesting upbringing for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when people when I start talking about, you know, plant-based nutrition in my office, you know, oftentimes they'll start in like, well, I was raised this way, and it's like, okay, I'm from West Virginia. You know, I hunted, my family had hogs, you know, the kids' job was to make the lard, you know, I never had fruit that wasn't in a pie. So it's like, you can't tell me something that you've done that I haven't done, really, as far as, you know, making the turn. So it's a bit similar.
And that's also just, at least in my opinion, not a very effective argument. Just because I've always done it, this is why I should continue doing it. Or I grew up this way. This doesn't necessarily mean it's the most scientifically sound, the most nutritionally sound, the healthiest approach. And then we could make, we've heard all the arguments for years. I mean, we say the same things about slavery, smoking, all kinds of different things that we think are pretty ridiculous ideas today. But I think it sometimes can be helpful for us in those conversations to express that. You know, I grew up on a farm too. You know, I raised animals for food. I sold animals in auctions. This is what I did, and I just decided I didn't want to do that anymore. And then I started learning more about farming practices, and then more about nutrition later on, and athletics and all that. And this is what I do now, and this is why. And I think so that can be a helpful part of the conversation.
When you first made the transition from more of an endurance athlete to bodybuilding, did it ever cross your mind that I'm not going to be able to do this because of my nutrition?
You know, it crossed my mind when I first became vegan, because growing up, I wanted to be a professional wrestler. I wanted to be like Hulk Hogan, big, strong, like He-Man or Captain Planet. And here's what I really wanted. And of course, I was barely 100 pounds at age 15. And so it was something I worried about at that stage. So when I first became vegan, I wondered, you know, can I actually get bigger and stronger and achieve these bigger goals that I have that I want to do as an adult later on in life? And, you know, my sister helped put me at ease a little bit. This is way back, again, back in the mid-90s, when she said, listen, at the end of the day, your body doesn't need meat, milk, and eggs. It needs the nutrition that's commonly associated with those things. It needs vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, glucose. It needs these essential nutrients, but they don't have to come in these forms. In fact, they might come in better forms elsewhere. And so that put me at ease a little bit. But I worried a little bit because I was an endurance athlete most of my high school career, along with playing basketball and a few other sports that aren't totally classified as endurance. And I even ran cross country in college for a year. And so I'd always been small and skinny, even by age 20. And so when I entered into bodybuilding, or lifting weights, I should say, when I started lifting weights, I wasn't totally sure, but I certainly wasn't scared or afraid or worried that I wouldn't be able to. I knew I had a really strong work ethic, and I figured regardless of what perceived obstacles were there, I would be able to overcome it. And that's how eventually I started my website and everything else, because I put on 40 pounds pretty quickly, 30 pounds in 1 year, and overall gained 75 pounds from when I went vegan over a fairly short time and became champion bodybuilder, and clearly I was able to express that not only is this possible, but it can be very, very easy and beneficial, and you can do it successfully.
Yeah, I found, you know, I was looking through your, you know, your book, and, you know, oftentimes when, you know, especially nutritionists get involved, and of course, in some of the sports like football and baseball, and you know, people that, when you're playing sports, you're burning a lot of calories, you need to increase your protein intake. And of course, I hear it from my patients, and that's always a funny conversation, because they'll say, I felt tired because I'm not getting enough protein. And it's like, you know, okay, I'm training, you know, a lot of hours a week for, you know, Ironman triathlons and marathons, and I don't worry about my protein, and I have lots of energy, so I don't really, you know, it's more of a calorie thing than if you're fatigued perhaps. But you know, what initially did you try to bump the protein up, or, you know, I know you did a lot of experimentation, or you tried to increase the calories, or it was just one and the other? How, you know, what was your approach?
Well, here's, and this is really important, and I think this is one of the fundamental things I think people need to understand, people listening and people have questions about this, because I've been through this for 20 years. Here's one of the most important things. When I first started lifting weights, I had all kinds of enthusiasm. I was really motivated. I was taking notes, and I was even taking some plant-based supplements to help me build muscle and all this. And after an entire year, I only gained 1 pound. And I was, of course, pretty discouraged. And I could have easily given up right there or stopped and said, it's not really in the cards for me. Maybe I should pursue something else that I'm genetically really good at, like distance running. And go on my merry way doing something else. But what I had to do was really reflect on what I was really doing during that time. And when I was really honest about my behavior, I really wasn't going to the gym all that much, even though I was enthusiastic about it. I was hanging out with a bunch of friends in college. I was playing video games and chasing after girls and hanging out way too late at night and not making it to the gym. And also, I really wasn't eating that much. I was eating just a lot of refined foods and not very nutrient-dense foods and convenient foods and vegan this, that, or vegan burrito, or vegan, you know, vegan bologna sandwich from East Veggie Cuisine, or whatever the case was. I really wasn't putting myself in a position to be successful. So there's no wonder that I failed. I mean, I didn't gain any muscle because I never put myself in an opportunity where I'm eating a surplus of calories, I'm eating really healthy or nutrient-dense calories, I wasn't working out very often. And for the very next year, I had a different approach, and this is what I always like to share when I give my lectures and seminars and things like that, is the moment that I changed my approach and I trained 6 days a week and I ate 6 meals a day and I documented everything, I gained 19 pounds in 12 weeks, 28 pounds in 10 months, and went essentially from where I was, just spinning my wheels, trying to get bigger, to a full-on bodybuilder within a year, up 30 pounds, and then I put on another 10 pounds the next year or so, and there I was at 195 pounds when I had no business doing it just about a year, year and a half prior. And that was simply because of consistency, accountability, transparency, and putting myself in a position to be successful. And it's no different than people who are trying to lose weight year after year and they can't do it. It's 99% of the time they're not putting themselves in a position to be successful, therefore can't expect those results they're seeking when they're not actually doing the work. So that's how my journey began and how I actually figured it out. I just needed to be a little bit more honest with what I was doing with my time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a fantastic point. You know, often, you know, there's a lot of data that, you know, people even report dietary histories. They're at least 20 to 30% off of what they actually eat. And, you know, if I often talk to people, you know, what do you have for dinner? What do you have for lunch? And then the more you talk, the more you get, oh, yeah, well, then I went to Chili's or I went to, you know, so-and-so restaurant. I went out with my friends. And, you know, so it, like you say, it's self-sabotaging for the most part.
And to answer your question quickly, I realize I missed part of your question and my answer. I did start out with a higher protein approach when I was really putting on a lot of weight during an accelerated period. I was eating a lot of calories. I was eating about 5,000 calories a day, but I was also eating a lot of protein, 250 to 300 grams of protein a day. And I did that for a while. But I also felt really full and really kind of tired at times or bloated or upset stomach. And I was also just eating anything that I could. I was eating refined French bread, sandwiches, burritos, a bunch of Clif Bars, as many as 7 in a day. I mean, I was just eating lots of different stuff. It wasn't until a bit later on that I really started to focus on nutrient-dense whole foods, which is what my new book is about, of course, and was able to find the same success, the same results in strength and muscle gain and everything else, but without having to eat all that extra protein and all those extra calories and having potential adverse effects on kidney, liver, bone density, and all the other things that come with those excess calories. So I have tried lots of different approaches within this vegan lifestyle.
I thought it was really fascinating, you know, that at one point, you know, one of your experiments, you actually bulked up quite a bit, doing almost 80-10-10.
I talk about a 70-15-15 approach because, mm-hmm. and that's 70% carbohydrates, 15 protein, 15 fat, because when you really look at the numbers, to achieve 80-10-10 is mostly leafy green vegetables, some other vegetables, and fruit. The moment you add in legumes, nuts, seeds, grains, all these other whole foods, they just have a higher percentage of fat, higher percentage of protein, especially nuts and seeds, legumes, beans, lentils, things like that, that 80-10-10 really isn't even achievable at that point because they're more calorically dense foods like nuts and seeds, lentils, et cetera, become a bigger part of the total caloric equation. So So anyway, I found that 70-15-15 was much more attainable and practical, and it seemed to work really, really well.
Yeah, I really like the table when you actually broke it down to the caloric density. I think that really lays the point out well when you talk about, you know, greens and vegetables, salads, 100 calories per pound, and vegetables 200, and fruits 300, and then you go up to oils 4,000 calories per pound, you know. So I mean, I think that really, because I think we're that's something that really gets lost in the traditional standard American diet, is just how much oil there is in the diet, how much fat there is in the diet, and how calorically dense and nutrition poor that is.
Right. And when you look at it, let's say you look at a traditional salad, a regular salad, a pretty good sized plate or bowl of salad should probably be just a couple hundred calories. Still packed full of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and fiber and wonderful things in it. But then you cover that with a, let's say, an oily dressing. Forget adding cheese or other things to it. Just an oily dressing. What you really could do is take this really healthy salad and turn it into a high-fat, high-calorie junk food. And that's what's happening to people everywhere all the time. We don't really think about that. We think about, well, this is going to offset this. Yes, I'm having this greasy dressing, but I'm also eating the salad. Well, okay, maybe the dressing is 500 calories and the salad is 100. So now, what is this, 80-something percent of the calories from that meal are now fat from this processed oil that's void of most nutrition. So that's happening all the time. And you look at, I think I give these examples in the book, you look at potatoes. Potatoes are great food, 500 calories per pound, but the moment they're turned into chips or fries, they're 2,500 calories per pound. They go up fivefold because of the oil it has, and then, of course, the salt and oil make them, appeal to a lot of people to be tastier and then to eat more of them. And so now you're looking at five times the caloric density, and you want to eat more of them because of certain attributes that make them extra tasty or addicting. So we can run into a lot of problems, and so I think just understanding that caloric density scale and understanding a nutrient density scale, or at least a basic understanding of nutrient density, can really impact the way we look at food.
Protein supplements, you talked about early on that you used them when you were, you know, really trying to kind of make the leap. Do you use them at all now?
No, I haven't used protein supplements in about 3 years, maybe 4 years, 2012. Was the last time I used them. And here I am now at getting close to 190 pounds, even though I retired from bodybuilding about 5 to 6 years ago. And I even dropped down to 160-something when I was running just a couple of years ago. I took a break from bodybuilding, actually during the time I was writing the book, and I wrote a little bit about that in the book too, that I took a break from lifting weights. I didn't walk into a gym for 8 months. I started running. I ran 4 half marathons in 1 year. I got down to a weight that I hadn't been since, I guess, age 19 or 20, and so 15 years ago. And through no supplementation except for vitamin B12 and a primarily whole food approach, some processed foods here and there, when I especially eat in international cuisine, but primarily whole food, supplement free for 3 or 4 years now, and I went from 168 pounds to almost 190 today, talking to you. So, I try to show through example that you can still achieve your muscle-building goals, your strength goals, your athletic performance goals without these isolated, concentrated products, without special supplements, without an emphasis on high-protein foods. I mean, just eating a diversity of real food and being transparent about it, that is, I really think that's the recipe for health and athletic success.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, one thing, you know, it bothers me when I see young people eating a certain way that, you know, again, I don't really agree that it's going to be that much performance enhancing, but, you know, take a football player that bulks up and has a high percentage of fat, and, you know, they're eating all this terrible food, and then so what does that do to them 20 years from now? It just basically sets them up for a lot of disease. And So, I mean, it's such a better way to go is how you're describing it. And the other thing that, you know, is kind of, I read a little bit about, you know, insulin-like growth factor. We, you know, we obviously associate it with animal protein and specifically dairy. And that's a lot of reason why, you know, traditional bodybuilders may want a lot of whey protein and they can get a lot of IGF to build muscle maybe quicker. But, you know, it's also comes with a lot of side effects, you know, a lot of cancer promoting, blood vessel closure promoting, you know, diabetes promoting, a lot of things promoting bad things. And that possibly even if we take that one step further into vegan protein, you know, isolates and really concentrating that amount, you know, we might be starting to approach that a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I find I share a lot of those same concerns. I greatly worry when I see people, especially young people, following bodybuilding type diets, vegan or not, that are just loading up on protein like crazy. And yeah, when I see people seeking out whey and casein protein as if these are just wonderful things, you know, slow releasing casein protein to have at nighttime and a whey protein right after my workout and all of these things. I mean, this is really troubling. A lot of these products probably shouldn't be allowed to be sold if we really take the overall impact that it has on mortality rates and health and disease and these types of things. And I also worry about excess plant protein too. I don't know what the studies are and what the results are and how they compare totally with whey and casein over time, but it just seems that an excess intake, especially with isolated nutrients, isolated protein especially, could be problematic for a number of reasons. I mean, one thing people don't even often think about is it's not just the perhaps negative side effects that come with it or the adverse implications, but oftentimes we're depriving ourselves from other whole food, complex carbohydrate-rich, vitamin, mineral-rich, antioxidant-rich, superior foods that we could be eating, but we're stuffing ourselves full of this meat analog, tofu hot dog, filling up 800 calories of our diet, maybe a third or a fourth of our total caloric intake daily. I don't know if that's such a good way to go. And so I do worry about the overconsumption or overuse these isolated nutrients, be it powder, supplements, or even the sodium-rich, heavily processed, protein-injected meat analogs, substitutes, whatever you want to call them. I believe there can be some damage there as well, especially over the long term. And again, not to be underestimated or understated, but the fact that when we do that, we do deprive ourselves of some other foods that are more nutrient dense and more beneficial, that have more fiber, more water, more antioxidants, and are just overall better with a diversity of nutrition. So I think that has to be considered too.
Yes, thank you. I agree. And it's, I mean, you're just a wonderful lighthouse for, you know, doing things the right way. So, you know, I applaud you. Changing a little bit over to the, you know, more, so you do some coaching now as well, correct? With some people that are looking to bodybuild?
Well, a little bit. You know, most of my colleagues do a lot more coaching, especially because I'm kind of out of the game from bodybuilding. I retired a while ago, but I spend most of my time writing articles and doing interviews and writing books and touring and lecturing. So in a sense, I do some coaching that way, and there are some people I have worked with. In fact, there's someone I'm working with right now to achieve his fat loss goals, and I've worked with a few other people in recent years. But really, I don't do a lot of one-on-one coaching or group coaching, but a bunch of my colleagues do. And in fact, that's part of their business model, it's part of their lifestyle as trainers, as they do a lot of coaching, especially in the bodybuilding world. What I try to do is do more mass appeal articles for magazines, newspaper, TV, blogs, podcasts, radio, whatever the case is, and share a lot of this general information that, kind of like my book's approach, that when applied, it should work for most people because they're there are these foundational elements that are so overlooked by people, and things like accountability and consistency and helping compound. So anyway, so not a ton of coaching, but I try to keep up with emails when I can and engage with people on social media platforms and do interviews like this, you know, on a regular basis.
Fantastic. You know, just as there are a million diet books out there and the population is so confused about how to eat and what's, you know, what's what, there's also a lot of confusion as far as weight training, you know, high reps, low reps, you know, fat burning, long, slow. When you, in your book, you looked a little bit about, you talked about red versus pink versus white muscle and, you know, how you do your pyramid training. Can you speak a little bit to that, to like, say the average, you know, let's, you know, look at the average person starting to weight train for their health, you know, increase their bone density, improve their, maybe they're an endurance athlete or just a general person that wants to be toned and fit. Do they need to exercise to, you know, to their sore that they can't walk the next day? You know, it, can they do a little bit and they'll be, you know, they'll get something out of it? Where, you know, what's kind of the range of things?
Yeah, well, I think in general, it makes a lot of sense to do a variety of repetition training. So some higher rep training, some lower rep training, some mid-range rep training to hit different muscle fibers differently and to work on different things, work on endurance, work on flexibility, work on strength, work on muscle size. And so something like a pyramid schedule is a great way to do it. And one of the things that goes well with pyramiding up, which is, at least from my approach, is doing higher reps at first, kind of like a warm-up, and then increasing the weight as the workout goes on, by lowering repetitions. Obviously, you can't lift as much as you keep adding more weight in the same exercise. And then peaking at a place where you hit essentially a one rep max, where you can't do more than one repetition. So you need a spotter for this, or to be on some sort of machine you can just set down, or a free weight exercise and you can set down, something that's not going to smash you or crush you. But the thing that I like about that is you really get a good solid warm-up in, which a lot of people miss out on and perhaps end up injured or creating some damage to muscle tissue that did not need to be there. And I've been down that road many times myself. I've been injured more times than I would like to talk about, but not in the last 3 years, because I've really focused on this really warm-up approach of doing high repetitions until my muscles get to adapt to the stress that they're going to go under over the next hour or so. And so that's one of the great benefits. You get this nice range of motion enhancing, flexibility enhancing, blood circulation improving warm-up with 20 reps, 25 reps, 30, whatever it is, push-ups, squats, very lightweight dumbbells, whatever it is to really get your body going. And then you get to adapt into it. And so you add more weight. And so you get to push yourself harder and get stronger and stronger. And by adding those really low reps, one rep max or 2 to 4 repetitions where you peak, I think that really helps in stimulating muscle growth. And you get to create some additional micro tears and muscle fibers. And you get to push more weight and get the feeling of getting stronger, and then allow adaptation to kick in over time so you really do get stronger. And then once I hit that peak, that pyramid back down, and what's fun about that is that once you do reach that maximal effort where you can only get 1 or 2 repetitions, then you get to go back down and get back up to 8, 10, maybe 12 repetitions, and you can notice the change in flexibility. I mean, even as I'm talking to you right now, I can visualize doing a bench press, for example. When I first start out, I'm a little stiff. You know, I'm having to warm up. And even those first few sets when I'm putting on heavier weight, I'm just still not quite as pliable or flexible as I'd like. But now, after doing those heavy sets plus all the warm-up sets, now I'm super flexible. And again, I feel like I can stimulate even more muscle growth, create more flexibility, more blood flow, better self-nutrition, and really get the best of both worlds. So in general, I think 8 to 12 repetitions are good for most people. And if you're not trying to be an Olympic lifter or power lifter, you're not entering any competitions, you don't plan to get up on the bodybuilding stage, but you just want to be able to build muscle, you want to burn fat, you want to achieve results, then I think you can do a pyramid if you want, or just aim for 8 to 12 repetitions and just work really hard. I mean, don't make 8 repetitions easy. Don't just stop on 8. I mean, pick a weight where you can't go beyond 8. I mean, you couldn't do 9 if you wanted to. That's how I look at that rep range.
Okay, that was very, very helpful. You know, I'm kind of smiling to myself. You know, I started out doing marathons. Probably, I was probably 40. And, of course, I went from 3 miles to a marathon. And, you know, but I got injured, you know, and so I was injured. And it's like, well, somebody said you should lift some weights. So I went into to the gym to lift some weights, joined a Gold's Gym. And I was just doing upper body because I'm a runner, right? I don't need to work my legs. And so there was a trainer that kind of was watching me, you know, doing, you know, whatever. Of course, I'm one of these people that I geek out. So I bought Arnold Schwarzenegger's book. I bought a bunch of weight training books, you know, and I read them all. And so I go in and I had my plan as far as doing my upper body weights. And, you know, I got stuck into the barbell once and, you know, but this trainer came up to me and said, you know, you should work out, you know, you should let me train you. And it's like, okay, you can do, you know, but I don't need to do my legs. Well, one thing came to another, and then, you know, it, you know, came in one day and he's like, so he had me do legs. And I thought, you know, well, I'm a marathon runner. I'll be fine. Right. And, well, walking, I used to work out at lunchtime. So when I went back to my office, you know, walking up the stairs, my legs were all rubber and I thought I'm in deep trouble. And of course, the next day I went to stand up out of bed and fell back down because, you know, my calves wouldn't hit, my feet wouldn't hit the ground. You know, my calves were so tight. And I'm like walking and my, you know, 75-year-old father was like watching me. He's like, you know, you sure you know what you're doing here? It's like, oh yeah. He's a bodybuilder. He's, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be. And so, you know, learn by, you know.
Right. It's funny how our background or our past training or even perceived ideas can influence what we do or don't do. And we may have that perception like, oh, I'm a, I don't know what, a rower or something, so I need to train my core. And then when we do with weights or with resistance training in a gym environment, we could be shocked at maybe certain areas that were weak that we didn't realize. Maybe our lower back was really weak and we didn't realize that and it started to give out on us, or a certain side of our obliques or serratus or lower upper part of our abs were not as strong as we thought, based on our previous experience with exercise. Or like you said, a lot of people decide they want to skip training legs. They don't think it's going to play a factor in their life, or any number of different things that we decide to miss or omit for one reason or another. It can certainly be a wake-up call when we finally do. And it's one of those things that you never really know when you're going to need to use those muscles either. I mean, when you go for a long hike or a really steep hike, climbing mountains or even just, I don't know, there's opportunities that arise on a regular basis where you have to use muscles you weren't really expecting. And so when those muscles are trained, like maybe you prevent yourself from a fall or something like that, those muscles are already used to having stress on them, so they're less likely to get injured, to tear, to impact bones as a result of muscles giving out. There's all these different reasons why it is really good to train the whole body and at least put in some time for calves and quads and hamstrings and biceps and shoulders and everything else, because there's times when we've got to carry heavy things, or when we've got to climb a lot of stairs, or when power goes out in a tall hotel or something and there's no elevator use and you've got to be able to climb stairs. Whatever the case is, it's nice to be prepared from a total body workout experience and having that endurance training from the higher reps and the strength from the lower reps. Like if you need to help take something heavy up off the ground in an emergency or whatever, your lower back, your forearms, your grip strength is there to be able to do it. I think there's some real world applications for for exercises that can be done in the gym.
Yeah, I have to give my daughter a thank you. She got her degree in exercise phys and strength and conditioning, and her boyfriend's a strength and conditioning coach as well. And so with my marathon and triathlon buildup, I threw my back out several times for various reasons. The last time was basically an injury. I fell down getting my dog twisted me, and we got twisted up running, and I ended up on the ground. But anyway, since I started doing, weight training, this buildup has been much easier on me, and I feel much, after my swim, bike, run workouts, I feel much better. I'm not as fatigued. Knock on wood, I've stayed uninjured. I can see it's made a tremendous difference. And you're just more well-rounded and well-balanced too.
Yeah, and I think it's got to be said too that a really nutrient-dense, whole food, plant-based diet can really help with recovery as well. That's one of the things that's bringing people to the vegan athlete lifestyle. Whether they're interested, maybe they're not interested in animal rights at all, or any of those environmental applications that come with vegan living or plant-based eating. A lot of athletes in all walks of life, from professional sports to Olympic athletes, weekend warriors, are coming to a plant-based diet for athletic benefits, improved recovery, higher energy. Like you mentioned, I think when we started the call today, that people may complain that they're tired and they think they need to up their protein, which, as you and I know, is the least efficient energy source, behind carbohydrates and fats. And there's some confusion there that people think, well, if I'm feeling lethargic or something, maybe I need more protein or more animal protein or something like that, where it could be the absolute complete opposite. More whole food, complex carbohydrates boost energy, speed up recovery, more anti-inflammatory properties found in whole plant foods, antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, essential fats. I think that's one of the wonderful benefits of a whole food, plant-based diet that a lot of people are embracing, is that improved recovery time. So for someone like you, run, bike, swim, marathons, and all that, to someone like me, lifting really heavy weights in a gym, this is going to benefit both the endurance athletes, the strength athletes, really anybody who wants to get the highest return on investment from a high net gain, nutrient dense diet. So the food part, I think, is a big asset in the athletic performance and recovery too.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to do this as long as I can. So I think, to take full advantage of it, eating, the whole food plant-based diet keeps me healthy all around. And like you say, the recovery is so much more improved eating this way. So it's fantastic. So what are your plans? More books in the future? Or?
Yeah, always more books in the future. I've written about 7, but only 2 have been published. Writing is one of my all-time favorite passions. And so it just takes time. My first book came out 5 years ago, Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, and the next book was 4 years later. Shred It came out in November last year, 2014. So it was a pretty long gap in between, but I have a few companion books that were actually supposed to be out already, a training journal and a nutrition journal that go along with Shred It. I actually mentioned them in the book in numerous places, but I fell a little behind on those as I was touring with the current book, and I've been doing a lot of traveling and speaking and just regular work projects and working out and things like that that pushed those back a little bit. So my immediate goal is to finish those journals, those companion books to Shred It, which is really going to help people with accountability and transparency to be able to document their own progress and be able to have those records. And then I plan to write more books. And in the near future, I'm taking off to Australia next month, and we'll be doing a tour up there for about 3 weeks. I was there last year as well to debut the book, and I was very well received there. The book did really well in Australia, and I've been invited back. So I'll be there in October and November, and I'll be attending some vegetarian festivals in, Central Florida, Cocoa Beach area.
What is that?
That's October 11th. I believe Cape Canaveral, Cocoa Beach area. So October 11th, I'll be out there. And Dallas, Texas, October 17th. And then Sydney, Australia the next weekend. And then after a few stops in Australia for 3 weeks, we'll be back in Portland Veg Fest, November 14th and 15th. And then just spend some quiet time during the winter months to do some writing and gear up for hitting the road again in the new year.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, I've certainly enjoyed your book, and you know, I'll talk with your publicist. Maybe I can get some copies for the office. I try to keep some you know, good books in the office, and then certainly that nutrition diary will be a great thing to have, you know, in the weight training again for accountability. So that would be a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you well, and it's certainly been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for all the tips and tricks, and I'll keep transparent and keep working out.
And we'll meet too. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope listeners got some good value out of this, and people can always find me online, social media, just look up Robert Cheek or veganbodybuilding.com, and I will get right back to work on these journals to get them out ASAP. I know they'll be a helpful resource. So thanks for thinking of me today and for spending some time with me. I hope this does inspire people to go out there and take action and make it happen. So thank you again.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Robert. He's very gracious to spend some time answering my questions about fitness. His book is great, Shred It. He also can be found, his website is veganbodybuilding.com. He's found on Instagram at Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, and he's on Twitter at Robert Cheek Fit, and that's a capital R, capital C, H-E-E-K-E, and capital F-I-T. Hope you take some time to look at some of his amazing sites. So if you want to get in touch with me, I can be found at jamiedelaney at gmail.com. As far as if you need to send me an email or have a question, I'd appreciate it. Also love a positive review on iTunes. That makes me more accessible to other people. And check out my website at drdelaney.com. It's drdolaney.com. The podcasts are all there, as well as my blog and some other information about the office and our nutrition course. The nutrition course is going well. We're headed into week two, or the second session tomorrow. And I think we're going to do... I do a bok choy salad with a pomegranate seeds, orange, and a lemon dressing, and has a few walnuts in there. And I'm going to do a hummus bar, so I'm going to make hummus without oil, and I'm going to show my students different ways that you can make dressings by adding different things to hummus to thin it out, or different ways to make hummus and do open face sandwiches. So I'll let you know how that goes. And until next time, keep exercising, get some sunshine, and eat your veggies.